You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Biden pledges enough vaccine for every American by the end of May. Meanwhile, Texas and Mississippi decide the pandemic is over for them. They lift the mask mandate and go full capacity at businesses. Senate on the verge of voting for a $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. We have the good, the bad, and the ugly. Republicans look to shiv the Voting Rights Act. Have a bad day at the Supreme Court. Question is, will it matter? Meanwhile, in New York State, calls mount for Andrew Cuomo's resignation in the wake of revelations about impropriety with women and his sending COVID patients to nursing homes and covering it up. Neera Tanden's nomination for the Office of Management and Budget withdrawn, sunk by Joe Manchin and Republicans. Georgia responds to a Republican 2020 loss by passing a bill to keep people from voting. Pentagon Inspector General finds Trump's military doctor and now Texas congressman denigrated female colleagues, used excessive booze and Ambien. That tracks. Montana, meanwhile, votes down a right-to-work bill. Warren, Sanders, and others introduce a wealth tax aimed at multi-millionaires and billionaires. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. With me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Happy Wednesday, Emma. This is, we've almost made it through half the week at this point.
Oof. Yeah, it's March, but still feels, although it's a pretty nice day out today, but overall, I'm having a lot of winter fatigue for sure.
There's a lot of winter fatigue. There's a lot of COVID fatigue, obviously. And we are so close. Like you say, you look out the window, it looks almost like spring, except for it's a little bit colder than it should be for spring. But, you know, for March 3rd, we're doing okay. We're so close. We're so close. And of course, if we were the governor of Texas, we would say, you know what? I know this is a 100-yard a marathon, but we're going to check out somewhere around mile 12. Yeah. We're going to try and Rosie Ruiz this. How's that for a dated reference?
Well, I don't know it. So
I don't know.
Oh, wow. Sports reference. Wow. That Emma doesn't know. Interesting.
Rosie Ruiz. Who is that?
I believe, if I remember correctly, she was the woman who in the Boston Marathon. This is probably 30 years ago, left the marathon, took a car and got out and jumped back in, won the marathon.
Thinking outside the box.
Exactly.
I kind of love her.
I'm not sure if the regulations had said you can't do that. So,
but found a way around the rules of having to run that long. God forbid.
Indeed. And at least in Texas and Mississippi, they have decided, you know what? Tired of the pandemic. I think we're going to just say it's over. And, you know, we are literally 3 or 4 weeks out from the vaccination being available enough and widely available enough and actually vaccinating people where, you know, it's a 3 or 4 week, maybe a 6 week difference could make all the difference in the world. We have seen over the course of the past 60 days, the rates of infection, the rates of hospitalization, and the rates of death drop precipitously. Although now it is plateaued, folks aren't quite sure why it's plateaued. They don't know if it's because maybe people have been relaxing a little bit, maybe because there's a certain amount of virus that's out there, and there's a baseline that you can get to when if you have this many people who are available, you know, potential hosts for the infection. They also don't know if it's a function of variants. We just don't know. But we will get a sense if these relaxations, as they could be called,
or eliminations,
or eliminations,
zero mask mandate in Texas and 100% opening at full capacity everywhere. Cool.
I mean, it's just it's stunning, and the difference between doing this now and 6 weeks from now, I think, will be dramatic, and part of that is because of this announcement by Joe Biden. Originally, he had said 1 million vaccines per day for 100 days. I think we are above that now, certainly. And I think we're about to be significantly above it. I think they're going to get close to 2 million vaccines a day within a matter of weeks. Largely because of this Johnson & Johnson, but also because the production is ramped up on the Pfizer. Its production is ramped up on the Moderna. I know that in New York State, there are counties who are getting, you know, three times the amount of vaccine that they got just 2 or 3 weeks ago. Joe Biden has announced that there will be enough supply. Let's be clear here, supply, right? That doesn't mean that people are going to be vaccinated, but enough supply for every adult in this country by the end of May.
It's incredible. That's a 2 month bump up, because July was initially the target.
End of July, correct. And so let's play this clip. This is President Biden yesterday making that announcement.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May. Let me say that again. When we came into office, the prior administration had contracted for not nearly enough vaccine to cover adults in America. We rectified that. About 3 weeks ago, we were able to say that we'll have enough vaccine supply for adults by the end of July. And I'm pleased to announce today, as a consequence of the stepped-up process that I've ordered and just outlined, this country will have enough vaccine supply, I'll say it again, for every adult in America by the end of May. By the end of May. That's progress, important progress. But
and
not just progress, it's an exponential leap.
The exponential leap. And I guess, look, I find it hard to believe at this point that they would go out there and they would have Joe Biden make this announcement if they weren't extremely confident that they were going to be able to say by the end of May, look, there are now 300 million vaccinations available or 250 million vaccinations available. And some of those will be single dose and some of those will be double dose. I would be very surprised. And it seems to me that, you know, at that point, maybe you do even better than the end of May. And then the question becomes distribution. Well, the upside of all this, to the extent that there's an upside of not having vaccines in the amount that were anticipated at this point, is that you've basically given all of these outlets that are, we anticipate distributing it. That means counties, state facilities, that means drugstore chains, ultimately that'll mean doctor's offices and also hospitals. they've all been prepared to do this. In some instances, they've been doing it, and they've been doing it with less vaccines than they wanted to. So they have the capacity, and they have at least the structure. And then it's just a question of how hard is it to scale those. And I think most of these entities have a sense of that. I was listening to an interview with like the local county supervisor around here, and he was like, you know, we've been prepared to do four times as many vaccines, you know, for months. And so to scale up and just do twice or three times the amount that we're prepared to do, we can do that.
Right.
And so, you know, if they had the vaccines, they'd be able to vaccinate everybody in this county. It's not a huge county, you know, within a matter of 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I think it's just important to note, we're critical of Joe Biden when we need to be. We come from a progressive perspective. That's how I'd characterize my perspective, at least. It's been a home run thus far with the vaccine distribution in terms of I utilizing the Defense Production Act, compelling Merck to basically create the Johnson & Johnson vaccine so that it can be disseminated at a much higher rate. And then, of course, what we saw with the purchasing of additional Moderna and Pfizer double dose vaccines. I've had zero issues with how Joe Biden has approached this. And I think it goes to show, at least in this area, there is a real stark difference in competent leadership versus what we saw under Trump.
Right. This was the pitch, Joe Biden's pitch essentially to America, which is like, I'm going to be able to do the competent things. I'm going to be able to do the sort of like functions of government in a competent manner. It was also just reported the other day that Donald Trump, before he left the office, like literally on the way out, he and Melania got the vaccine. And
by the way, it's not even like he would need it or she would need it. They just had COVID. I mean, who knows, but it's
conceivable because of the treatment that he received that he didn't build the antibodies one would. I mean, that's conceivable. And why wouldn't you take the vaccine at that point? But what you would do if you weren't a sociopath, what you would do if you weren't sort of like clinically narcissistic. I'm not a psychologist. This is not a medical, but you would say to the American public, I've gotten the vaccine. You should get yours. Right. I mean, like the role.
Biden did it publicly.
Of course. I mean, that's what you would do.
But the report said, Sam, he wanted to continue to appeal to the anti-vaxxer crowd. So like, that's where he's at. That's where his head is at, right? In the middle of a pandemic. So again, the bar is the floor. Understand that Trump was, you know, sub the floor. He was in the basement, obviously. But I do think, you know, as we're going to be critiquing Joe Biden's stance on Saudi Arabia and his lack of sanctioning MBS, as we're critiquing his $15 minimum wage caving, as we're critiquing all these things. Look, guys, we're trying to be consistent here. This has been a home run in terms of what we've seen with the vaccines, in my view.
I agree. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the COVID relief bill. It is on the verge of being voted upon in the Senate. There's some last minute negotiations that are taking place. We will talk about that when we get back. In the meantime, you've heard me multiple times stress the importance of protecting your online activity with ExpressVPN. But there's another reason you're going to love using ExpressVPN. You ready for this, Emma? We're in a pandemic. Everybody has been like going through shows that they, you know, in their queues that they've had there for ages. Everybody's like run through all of their marathons.
Well, I'm rewatching a show right now.
Well, I got good news for you.
Nice.
So Netflix, right? Thousands of shows on Netflix are only available outside the U.S.
What?
The Express, it's true. Netflix has, you know, Netflix in England, I mean, in countries all over the world. And they don't necessarily have the rights to shows, you know, to show them in America. They have the rights to say, we can show this in England. We can show it in Japan. Well, the ExpressVPN app encrypts your data, reroutes it through a server location of your choice. You catching this now? So it not only protects your data, but it lets you control which country you want Netflix to think you're in.
Whoa.
ExpressVPN lets you choose from over 90 different countries. So every time you run out of stuff to watch, you fire up the app on your laptop or on your smart TV. You could do it on your phone. Switch your country, hit connect. And it's not just for Netflix. You can use ExpressVPN to unlock shows or sports on other streaming services too, all around the world. Be smart. Protect your data. Stop paying full price for streaming services, only getting access to a fraction of their content. Visit expressvpn.com/majority right now. Get 3 extra months of their service for free. That's ExpressVPN, ExpressVPN.com/majority. ExpressVPN.com/majority to learn more. Also, folks, a little hesitant to go into places with a bunch of other people these days. Completely understandable. Also, people like to save money. They like to save time. So what's the solution? Well, stamps.com. Why? Because you don't need to go to the post office if that's not the way you want to spend your time. Stamps.com allows you to mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. You send letters, you ship packages, and you pay a lot less with discounted rates from the U.S. Postal Service and UPS and more. Stamps.com, you use your printer to print, well, your computer, I guess. Then you use your printer to print official U.S. postage. And you can do this. You want to do it at 9 in the morning? All right, great. Oh, what if you want to do it at 3 a.m.? Okay, fine. Midnight, anytime.
On a boat?
Well, I mean, if you got a computer and a printer on a boat.
Well, I'm very, very rich.
You're going to do the Dr. Seuss thing.
Yeah, well.
Any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. All you got to do is then you just schedule a pickup or you drop it off. Stamps.com, you get discounts for up to 40% off of post office rates. And you ready for this? Up to 62% off of UPS shipping rates. It's nuts. Stop wasting time. Stop wasting time going to the post office. Stop wasting time, period. Go to stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with my promo code Majority Report, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments, no contracts. Just go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Majority Report. That's stamps.com, promo code Majority Report. Stamps.com. You'll never have to leave your home again. Lastly, mentioned this yesterday. Folks know I'm a little bit parsimonious. Is that the way? Is it? Did I get that right? But I also like quality. And with Harry's, I don't have to choose. Harry's gives you award-winning blades at factory direct prices. For a limited time, Harry's is offering their starter set plus a free body wash for just $3 at harrys.com/majority. Emma said yesterday that her boyfriend like loves the flavor of the, you know, he's not supposed to eat the body wash.
I misspoke because we had just talked about Magic Spoon, the smell, and I was specifically told about the texture of the gel being light and not too heavy, but still washing.
You guys have a weird relationship. Stop. Harry's delivers a close, comfortable shave at a fair price. Just $2 per refill. Harry's believes in quality so much that they bought their own factory in Germany so they could own every step of the manufacturing process. And apparently this German factory is one of the few places in the world where they do the Gothic arch. I don't know what that is, but I can tell you this. It's a great shave. They've got the trimmer blades, which I usually talk about. I went to a ear, nose, and throat person because I've been having some issues. They told me I have a deviated septum. And so now I know why I have like my asymmetry with my nostrils. And ultimately, whatever it was, I got punched in the nose as a kid or fell or whatever it was, led me to appreciate Harry's more.
Okay.
I mean, that was like, honestly, my first thought was like, oh, I've been living this for a long time. I didn't realize.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's not the only reason why I like Harry's. I like it because it's less expensive than buying those other ridiculous razors. And they send it to me. I don't have to think about it. For a limited time, Harry's has an exclusive offer for listeners of my show. New customers can get a Harry's starter set and a free body wash for just $3 at harrys.com/majority. That's an over $16 value for just $3. You get the 5-blade razor. You get the weighted handle. You get the foaming shave gel, a travel cover, and a travel size body wash that apparently has a great texture. It's an incredibly great deal, but act fast while supplies last. Go to harrys.com/majority to redeem your offer.
I'm no longer bringing personal anecdotes into the ads.
I don't know about that.
From now on. Yeah, I can't resist.
Can't make that promise.
Yes, that's true.
Folks, just a reminder, this show relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, you not only support the free show, you get the fun half, and you get the rest of the show commercial free. Okay, so in the Senate, the $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid package passed the House last week. It is head to the Senate. They are now in the Senate, essentially negotiating amongst themselves, really amongst the Democrats. We know that we're not going to get any Republican votes. We're more than likely no Republican votes for this. It is being done through the reconciliation process, so they don't need the Republican votes. We know at this point that there is not going to be the minimum wage has been stripped from the bill. And as such, there's another $64 billion in there. Like, they've already set the number at $1.9 trillion. And they have already figured out that it hits all the thresholds. When the $64 billion figure I'm talking about is what the Congressional Budget Office scored the cost of the $15 minimum wage. That gets taken out. So there's another $64 billion in there. I don't think we're going to know where that goes until the end of this process. 800-page bill, it's constantly in flux until it gets passed. That's, you know, the nature of this. We do know that there have been reports. And have you heard anything else on this, Emma? I know that it was reported out.
Well, it was then confirmed by NBC that basically Joe Biden has agreed to lowering the cutoff threshold for, or the phase out thresholds, I should say, for the $1,400 checks, even though there's more money to play with right now.
I mean, theoretically. And now, so what does that mean? In the House bill and in the prior $1,200 checks and the $600 checks, the phase out for single filers started at $75,000. So if you're an individual, you're filing on yourself and you're making $75,000 a year, you're getting a $1,400 check. If you're making $76,000 a year, you're making a little bit less. It sort of tapers off. And the taper goes all the way in those in the House bill to $100,000. If you make $100,000, if you make $99,000, you get a smaller check. I don't know what the algorithm was, but it phase out down to zero at $100,000. Instead of that, Biden has, according to NBC, agreed that at $75,000, it starts to taper down, but the taper is steeper and it ends if you're making $80,000. So if you make $81,000, you may have gotten a diminished $1,400 check under the House bill.
But the point is that also that this is 2019 income for the most part, too, we should say.
Well, it's 2019 or it could be 2020 if you file before this goes out. If you file over the next couple of weeks, correct. And so it is conceivable if you, but nevertheless, in 2019, I mean, this has always been the problem, right? With 2019, if you base it on 2019, obviously when you get the $1,200 check in March of last year, it made sense to base it on 2019. When you got the $600 check in December, you know, the 2020's not over. So you really got to, I don't know how else they would fix that, right? I mean, how else would you establish that? So this is not, now I want to make clear here. When we were worried about this before, we were worried they were going to drop from the $75,000 level and they were going to lower that so that the phase outs would start earlier. But the phase outs don't start earlier. They are steeper and they're just not available to people making over $80,000. Again, 2019 or 2020 if you file, but I don't know how you escape that problem. And it doesn't implicate that problem because if you made in 2019, $80,000, in 2019, or I guess if you made $100,000, $95,000 in 2019 or $81,000 in 2019, and you made significantly less, you lost your job. I mean, then you're in unemployment and you're not going to get that extra check. But that would have been a problem too if you lost your job at $100,000.
Understood. I mean, the way that you alleviate this exact problem that you're talking about is use the monopoly money that you got from the $15 minimum wage being stripped from the bill to cast a wider net as opposed to tailoring it more. There's no reason to tailor it more, especially now that the $15 minimum wage isn't included.
Right. It's a different cohort of people. But yes, I agree with what you're saying. And we should say the phase out begins for $112,000 for head of the household. That is like if you are a father or mother and you are a single wage earner, that now ends at $120,000. So that went up. If you're a single wage earner, and the phase out for joint filers ends at 160. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So it used to be, I don't know what it is for the head of the household, but it used to be for joint filers, 150 is when the phase out begins, and it used to end at 200,000, and now it ends at 160. So the people who are making between 161 and 200,000 lose out of some measure of a check. Wouldn't have been $1,400. It would have been diminished. People who are single heads of households, it's now phases out at 120. I don't know what it would have been then, maybe 180, 160 in the old bill. But that's what you get. Higher income in earners. And again, you still have this problem of 2019 versus 2020. But high income earners there, less likely to get the $1,400 check. Now, the difference between this $1,400 check and the $1,200 check and the $600 check, however, is that unlike those previous two payments, adult dependents qualify for this round. So 26 million more Americans will be receiving a $1,400 check up to 26 million Americans that did not receive the $600 check and did not receive the $1,200 check. And that means college students, that means disabled adults, and that means elderly Americans who are adults living in somebody else's household or essentially a dependent.
Right.
And so in that respect, this is a much better situation because if you are making 70, if you're the head of a household and you're making $112,000 a year and you've got to pay for either your college children or maybe your mother, elderly mother, or your elderly grandmother or grandfather, or an adult who is maybe has as a dependent because of some type of disability or something that they can't work, they can't live on their own, you're now getting an extra $1,400 for that person. And so
Yes, that is. But, you know, to my point earlier, though, that all would have been true had these thresholds not been lowered for no reason.
Indeed. Indeed. And you know, Janet Yellen said it best, like, you can target things, but every time you target, you are missing hidden pockets of pain. And the idea that you're going to be that that parsimonious for folks at that income level still. And again,
or just like kingmaker-esque, like a lot of what this is too, in my view, is just this kind of arrogant puppeteer element that we see way too much in the Democratic Party. It's paternalistic too. They would rather be able to target things to such a specific degree as opposed to casting a wider net. And yes, this is still a good bill. I mean, the thing that's underrated too is the $3,600 a year child tax credit that's in here as well.
That's right.
Yeah, that's kind of akin to something that Romney proposed too, but it's still a good thing. And that's going to be included for families with young children. And I think up to 17 years old, you also get a payment as well. It's just not as large, but still very significant. And I wonder what they're going to do with that extra.
We'll see. I mean, who knows?
$1 billion or whatever it is. That's key.
In January, when the $600 checks hit bank accounts, personal spending increased by 2.4%. This is according to the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. And we're now looking at $1,400 per person. And I imagine with 26 million more people being eligible for that extra $1,400, plus the tax credits that you talked about, this is going to make a big, big difference for people. Research apparently done on those on the $1,200 checks saw that most people spent their checks on rent, food, and other essential bills. So this is going to be the biggest payment that people receive. Again, those people who are making over $80,000 through $100,000, they will not see this check. And
we should say too, they've done studies on how those payments affected state tax revenue too. And shockingly, I think the New York Times found that state tax revenue only on average dropped by around 2% or a little under 2% last year. And a lot of that had to do with these payments that were still going back into the economy. And then you also saw states like Florida without income tax really were harmed as well. But largely what it's, you know, these states should be thrilled. What's helping keep their economy afloat are these payments that are going back out.
To a large extent, people, you know, to the extent that, you know, when people got the money, they went out and bought stuff. And that's where, you know, a lot of the revenue is coming from. And so that's pretty huge. We also now, there's a big push. Again, the moderates, so-called moderates, the conservatives, I would call them, in the Democratic Party are going back and they're trying to get him to lower the extension of unemployment benefits, or the expansion, I should say, the federal expansion, right? Like, you get your state unemployment benefits, and the last round of expansion of that was $300, was $600 in the CARES Act. The one passed in December was $300 per week. This has $400 per week until August of this year. And Joe Manchin wants it to be $300, of course, because he says, quote, I've been at $300. It's kind of hard to explain why you're getting a bump up now. Suggesting that the higher $400 figure would reduce incentives for people to rejoin the workforce, just as increasing vaccinations are poised to help the economy reopen. We want people to get back to work, Manchin said. It'd be awful for the doors to open up and there's no one working. You got a lot of customers, no one working. That's the problem. This is just absurd. This is just absurd. Because first off, what would happen is if there was a smaller supply of workers, is that we know that pay would go up. And there's, I mean, the idea, what should drive people back to work and drive people into stores should be their sense that they can go and spend their money and they can go and earn their money without risking their lives. The idea that once people get fully vaccinated, they're not going to want to come back to work. Well, there'll be other people who will want to take that work.
There are not enough people at the Johnny Rockets. People aren't going to want to spend money. What is that?
And we know that in the first couple of months of the pandemic, Congress passed a $600 weekly. So how do you justify going down to $300? Joe Manchin. But, Joe Manchin will Joe Manchin. The other thing that is developing, and we just don't know yet, we just don't know where these things are going to land. It's quite possible that that money that is saved on the narrowing of the elimination of the $15 minimum wage and the narrowing of that threshold, that ramp down for folks who are making over $80,000 or did in 2019, could go into, and this is what's being pushed by at least 10 Democratic senators, automatic stabilizers. In other words, instead of saying we're going to provide these expansions in unemployment through August, or instead of actually putting any date on it, let's peg it to the number of unemployed in the country. So that if unemployment does not drop below a certain level, we don't have to come back and pass another bill. It just continues until unemployment drops to certain levels. That is also, they're trying to do this with all sorts of relief measures like SNAP. This was a problem, even with the HEROES Act, frankly, that the House passed, that they did not include these automatic stabilizers. And these are unemployment insurance, any type of direct payments, anything like that. It would be pegged to how the economy is doing, which makes sense, right? I mean, that's presumably why you go back and provide more insurance. In the Great Recession, this is from a piece of Talking Points memo, making the point that Democratic lawmakers, a bunch of them, learned a lesson from then. The Great Recession, this is according to Don Beyer from Virginia on a panel last June, they re-upped unemployment insurance 13 different times. So every time you go to do that, you have to negotiate with either Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, or the Republican Party, or frankly, Mark Warner or whomever in the Democratic Party. And the way you avoid that is you say, like, we're going to take it out of our hands. We know why we're providing this aid. It's because you have X number of millions of people unemployed. Well, if it drops below X number of million people, then we stop. And if it doesn't, then it just continues. So we'll see. I don't know if they'll be able to get that into the bill. We will see. But these are the big questions right now. But you should also know that there's something $60 billion, I think it was, for things like subsidies for child cares. And there's a lot of good things in this bill that I think we're going to see the benefits from. You know, the worst thing about the CARES Act was how much it waived. The problem wasn't so much that ordinary people, that the vast majority of people did not get the support they needed. It was very helpful in terms of dealing with poverty and keeping people above water. The problem was that everybody was driving under a yellow flag, but they whipped the green flag for corporations. So what ends up happening is one of the fundamental problems with our economic system is that it creates massive wealth disparity. And that happened over the course of this pandemic, where you have billionaires making billions more dollars over the course of just this pandemic. Over the course of the past year, may have been the best year that Jeff Bezos ever had. certainly probably was. And it's true of a bunch of other billionaires and multimillionaires. A lot of people made a ton of cash because corporations were basically told, we've got free money for you. We're going to backstop. You want to borrow money. You want to expand. You want to buy other things. You want to continue to amass concentrations of wealth and power. We got you covered. And that
the CARES Act basically socialized the stock market for the most part.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It, well, at least the, it socialized it in terms of what it provided a small number of people, but all the benefits are still privatized.
Yes, of course. That's, I mean, the stock market is pretty much for the most part only accessed by elite people, and the benefits were seen by the very elite people. So quite American in that regard, in terms of at least the hierarchy. There's still tiers in the elites.
So child care centers in this bill will receive approximately $40 billion. Now, of course, they've been devastated in the way because people were not sending their kids to child care. But this is going to provide this is going to go above and beyond for what the, you know, to just maintain the, to keep these things from going out of business. I mean, this is going to be, this could have a significant influence on the provision of childcare in this country, for low income people. So, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of benefits that come out of this bill that, we can't fully sort of like parse at the moment because it's massive. And we're talking about a massive amount of money. People got to remember that in that CARES Act, $2 trillion of that CARE Act, it was a $3 trillion bill. $2 trillion of that was actually just sort of a loaning provision that was backed up only by $500 billion that the Treasury Department had. So it earmarked $500 billion for the Treasury Department that essentially act as like as capital reserves for the Fed to loan. So there, that money, that was not money that went out to people. This $1.9 trillion is going to end up in the hands of more Americans than any other bill that has passed at this point. And so it's going to be more widely distributed. And there's a $15 minimum wage, never mind in the context of COVID, it was well overdue 4 years ago, never mind today. And so the real issue with the $15 minimum wage, in my mind, has less to do with COVID and more to do with this was an opportunity, because I will go to my grave believing that Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema were not going to vote against the $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill because the $15 minimum wage was in there.
100%.
And, but we won't know in this instance. Maybe, who knows, pick up a couple of seats in 2022. I don't know what those seats will be.
I don't know. I mean, I think the fight for 15 continues next reconciliation bill.
Right. And there will be two more reconciliation bills, or there can be, over the next 2 years. So we will get a sense as to how that will happen. In New York State, and we'll keep you up to date on that, obviously, New York State, greater calls for Andrew Cuomo to resign. Protests throughout the state over the past day or two. And we will see. The investigation will begin on Cuomo, and we'll see if more women come out.
And he lost that fight where he tried to appoint someone very closely associated with his closest advisor to be the independent figure overseeing the investigation. I find it quite amusing. It reminds me of what actually the Washington football team did with their sexual harassment allegations where they hired a lawyer paid by the owner to look into the sexual harassment allegations from inside the house. I mean, it's common practice in order to kind of quell PR concerns. And so we saw Cuomo try to get away with it. Tish James, New York Attorney General, said, I'm going to appoint someone myself. She has, I will say, just from a purely horse race political perspective, positioned herself quite nicely for a governor's run in 2022. First by coming out ahead of Cuomo on these nursing home numbers, where she basically said that Cuomo had obscured the data and hidden the half of nursing home deaths that he did hide, allegedly. And then, of course, she's also going to be overseeing this investigation into the sexual harassment and assault allegations, really. I mean, the kissing forcibly is assault into Andrew Cuomo. And so, you know, I think should someone like Cynthia Nixon not run again, I think Letitia James has set herself up quite nicely.
We'll see. Meanwhile, this is from the Strand. She'd be the first woman governor in the state. And this is from the Strand. Brendan has this tweet from the Strand. Someone saw the Strand bookstore. The Cuomo book has been moved from its previous floor spot, notable nonfiction, to the New York History Rose. So I don't know what that foretells. All right, let's move into this. There was oral arguments yesterday in front of the Supreme Court. And one of the big concerns, well, one of the things that we've been dealing with in this country for 7-8 years now has been the Supreme Court's attack on the Voting Rights Act. Particularly, they gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act in the Shelby case, which was, like I say, about 8 years ago now. And Section 5 was the preclearance. You had 16 counties around the country. I think it was in 13 states. Two of the counties were in New York City bordering New York City. And these were counties that over the course of the years showed racism in their attempts to their attempts to change voting laws were racist. They were trying to prevent either immigrants or other minorities from voting. Obviously, black people largely. And there are two cases that were argued and combined yesterday in the Supreme Court. Two Arizona laws that.
Just a coincidence that this comes after Arizona turns blue for the first time in a presidential race in 24 years.
These are laws that I think were passed before, but they know what's coming. I mean, they're doing this all across the country, but yes.
Yes.
And this is one of those situations where the outcome, the ruling is like who wins is less significant than how they win. Because there are still existing provisions of the Voting Rights Act. Specifically, there are two different sort of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act basically provides two different types of protections for voters and ostensibly against discrimination. If you can show that a law was passed with racist intent to prevent a minority group from voting, that was the intent, then that law should be struck down. Now, of course, over the years, Republicans, but also it happened with Democrats, have become more sophisticated in the way that they fashion laws to restrict voting. So in other words, they don't necessarily say like, well, we want to prevent black people from voting. So we're going to say, can't have black people vote. Or other ham-fisted ways. You can also, supposedly, Section 2 protects on the results. If the results are racist, even if the intent wasn't.
As determined by, too, now, though, the Supreme Court, if these results are racist in these two cases.
Well, that is always been the problem with the results test.
And I just want to say these two cases really quickly, just to point out, because I heard this on PBS and I thought this was really important. One of the cases requires voting officials to discard ballots if they're cast in the wrong precinct. And in Arizona, say you're cutting down on a bunch of polling locations, oftentimes voting happens in a big gymnasium and there's multiple lines in terms of precincts. Say you get in the wrong line, cast your ballot in the wrong line. No one tells you, which could definitely happen based on who's being hired to oversee these elections in these states, thrown out. And then the second one prohibits ballot collection, which particularly affects indigenous communities, rural communities where they don't have access to the post office. Say you give someone comes by and says, let me collect your ballot. This has been deemed legal in many states, and then drops them off en masse at a location in the post office. That would be illegal now. So that completely eliminates people who may be disabled, people who may be elderly, who aren't able to go out and vote and don't have someone to take their ballot to the ballot box for them, et cetera. And also, of course, indigenous communities, as well, as I mentioned. So that's primarily what these cases
are. These two laws. And then the question is like, are the results of this, are they racist? And are they racist? And the test of the results is really the issue. Because it's one thing to say, like, okay, the fact is that we know that the percentage of people who cast ballots in the wrong precincts is higher amongst minority communities. And part of it could be a function of you have election officials who will close one precinct and move people to another, or people don't have, the same access to transportation, minority communities, maybe they tend to be, they put two different ballot locations in the same physical place, two different districts, whatever it is. And so the question is like, how do you measure results? And there are a couple of cases that essentially provide this test. You have to determine whether such social and historical conditions exist, or that there are other. It's actually nine factors. The extent of any history of official discrimination in the state, the extent to which voting in elections of the state or political subdivision is racially polarized, on and on. And it is a very sort of messy, subjective test.
Subjective is key.
Yes.
Because we know who's making these determinations. Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, among others.
What was very dangerous about this case, and it hasn't been resolved, but there are people who are encouraged by the line of questioning yesterday, was that the Arizona Republican Party's brief and the Brnovich brief were arguing for a new type of test. Instead of this one that is, subjective, but has, some substantiation in the law, they wanted to apply a test where the plaintiff, that is the people who have been disenfranchised, must show that the law causes, quote, a substantial disparity in minority voters' opportunity to vote and to elect their preferred candidates. Substantial. Now, the problem is like, well, what does substantial mean? It also that the plaintiff, this is the person who has been disenfranchised, must prove that the election law caused this disparity. So did a law that says that if you cast in the wrong precinct, does that necessarily mean that there is a disparity in the ability necessarily for minorities to cast their ballot? Now, this is their proposal. And the fear that a lot of legal experts had would that this would be adopted, that the five Republicans on the Supreme Court, six, would adopt this test because it places such a high burden on the plaintiff to prove that it effectively makes the law virtually non-existent. And fortunately, it seemed like it was a bridge too far for five of the justices. Obviously, the
we don't know yet.
Well, but we don't know. But this is what this is. I'm just going off of the reporting that folks like Ian Millhiser and
I heard it was still unclear, so I don't know, but I'm trying not to.
We can't know.
I'm a little stitious, so.
No, we can't know. But people have cited Elena Kagan's hypothetical questions to the lawyer for the Arizona Republican Party. Imagine a state cancels Sunday early voting, she told Carvin, even though black people are 10 times more likely to vote on Sundays than white voters, because black voters tend to have a we have this as a clip.
We have that clip.
Let's play this.
A state has long had 2 weeks of early voting, and then the state decides that it's going to get rid of Sunday voting on those 2 weeks, leave everything else in place. That black voters vote on Sunday 10 times more than white voters. Is that system equally open?
I would think it would be, because let's think about it. Sunday is the day that we traditionally close government offices. It would be the exception rather than the rule to have government workers come in on a Sunday.
It's an exception to have government workers come in on a Saturday, too. That's not a real problem.
Well, I mean, there are Sunday closing laws, as we know from McGowan v. Maryland, which are different than Saturday. But in all events, Saturday would implicate other religions.
So that is equally open. Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Do we have more clips? Because she goes on to offer a bunch of hypotheticals, and suddenly the lawyer for the Arizona Republican Party realizes, like, oh, wait a second, this test may not work. Do we have the rest of it, Brendan, where she says about the country club?
Not the country club, but we have the clip where she talks about black voters.
Play that.
Yeah.
The state says we're going to have Election Day voting only, and it's going to be from 9 to 5. And there's plenty of evidence on the record that voters of won races are 10 times more likely to work a job that wouldn't allow them to vote during that time period. Is that system equally open?
Seems like it, because that would be pretty much the status quo in 1982. And, of course, if it was 8 to 7, you could make the same argument about...
How about 9 to 3?
I think any time you diminish from what I will call the usual burdens, if you went to 15 minutes, to use an extreme example, then obviously you're effectively denying...
So 9 to 5 is okay, but 10 to 4 would not be okay? Is that the idea?
Again, these are all hypotheticals that have never existed in the real world.
This seems like, you know, this doesn't seem so fanciful to me.
States are doing it. May not be.
9 to 5 is okay. 10 to 3 is not. Is that the idea?
Again, it's a sliding scale, and I think the farther you get from the normal hours that were extant in 1982, the much more suspicious it becomes. If you want to
play Justice
Gorsuch.
I mean, think of this guy arguing the constitutionality of trying to diminish the opportunity for people to vote and saying, well, in 1982, 9 to 5 was the norm. So we should just apply that now just because.
Dolly Parton told us to.
Exactly. And of course, there's plenty of data that that show that that will inhibit who votes. And in fact, that the story of the man who died, whose daughter found his records, the Republican godfather of gerrymandering. He had crunched all these numbers and basically was showing Republicans how to structure their laws and to gerrymander in such a way that you would diminish the power of the vote for non-white people. And that ended up being revealed in the course of the case about the census. The bottom line is there is some reason to believe, more than there was 2 days ago, that the Voting Rights Act lives for another day. Some of this stuff can be fixed statutorily, and that's what H.R. 1 and S1 purport to do in some instances, is fix some of the things that the Supreme Court has begun to attack in the Voting Rights Act.
Which is why the Republicans are going to kill it, DOA, dead on arrival, because
Mitch McConnell's
life's work is putting people on the Supreme Court, like Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and all, in order to literally do that. Republican status quo in order to prevent people from voting and more.
Democrats can pass it if they get rid of the filibuster.
They won't.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. So just a moment left here. Neera Tanden's nomination was withdrawn last night. And yesterday, you know, we heard this report that at the very least, Lisa Murkowski was floating the idea that, like, hey, if you let me drill in Anwar, maybe I'll vote for Neera Tanden. Good for Joe Biden. For
good
saying,
trade off.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is Joe Manchin obviously sunk Tanden's nomination. I don't particularly think that someone's nomination should be sunk on the basis of tweets from the left. I would have other reasons to oppose Neera Tanden's nomination. What's interesting, though, is there was no because she had alienated the left so determinedly, really, over the years, in many different ways, both by deed and by words, there was no one really to fight for her nomination. They could not rally people to pressure anybody, and that was the story. It was Manchin that killed it. And obviously, you know, some of the Republicans, because they're going to vote. Some of the Republicans are going to vote for some of Biden's nominees, without a doubt. But there was nobody to fight. And that's a lesson, I think, that the Democratic Party needs to learn. It's in many respects, it is an old story. Well, we'll talk more about this tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Just kidding.
Right. We're still here. All right, folks, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. We've got.
I hurt my back pretty bad, Sam. I feel like you.
You did?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Working out.
Oh, well, I didn't do it working out. I did it sleeping. That's the difference.
That's a workout for your subconscious.
Yeah, exactly.
I went too high on the kettlebell, and my whole lower back is shot depending on how I sit. So
you gotta be careful about that.
I know. Anyway,
all right, folks, don't forget, this show relies on your support. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. when you do, you support this free show, and you get the fun half, and you get the free show free of commercials. Also, don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. It's great coffee. And check out the AM Quickie. Sample it. See if you like it. 7 minutes in the morning. Get your headlines. completely free. You can find it at amquickie.com. Amquickie.com. Brendan tells me that Monmouth poll just came out. Forgiving $10,000 of student debt polls at 61%. Forgiving $50,000 polls at 45%. Interesting. Don't forget to check out Nomi's show. Not sure who is on today. If you guys know, you can find it at youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show or twitch.tv/TheNomiKey Show. Oh, NomiKey.
No. Underscore.
Underscore show.
Yeah.
Also, check out the Antifada. They'll be talking to Professor Toussaint Louzier and Bradley Green of the Chicago Black Panther Party, a contemporary of Fred Hampton's, about Judas and the Black Messiah. That is a new movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing that. Also, Matt, what's happening on the in Matt Leck Enterprises?
Oh, yeah. Still go check out my interview from last week's Left Reckoning with Peter Lindbaugh. On the commons enclosure and climate change and how it's basically all been going wrong since, and why 1802 particularly was a pivotal year for, you know, the mess we're in now.
1802 was?
Yeah, 1802 particularly, because the, you know, the Haitian Revolution had sort of, the reaction to that had sort of solidified. You have, yeah, a lot of interesting stuff going on in 1802. Coal was starting to be used a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Head into the fun half.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a man.
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Dannerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Dannerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Fucking reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a lot of bank.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black. Africans. And the alpha males are back. And the Africans are black.
You see Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Africans are black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black.
Come on! Come on! Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price. sacrifice or blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.